Today is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. You know why? Because life is unpredictable. We can never know what's going to happen tomorrow, or the day after tomorrow, or next week, or next month, or next year, or the next minute. We truly do not know what's going to happen next. It's been said many, many times. I don't know who first came up with it. I couldn't even find out. I tried. It's been said that children, especially little children, live in the present. They live in the present. Adults, generally younger adults, live in the future. And elders live in the past. There seems to me that there's a lot of truth in those couple lines. If you look around, you look at kids, and yeah, they're all for it right now. I don't want it later, I want it now. You ever seen a kid that didn't do that at some point? I want it now. Now is what's important to a child. But then again, young adults, probably starting in late teenage years, going on up through, I don't know, 30s, 40s maybe, they plan for the future. When they're in high school, they plan dating somebody, or maybe getting married in college, and then afterwards a career, having a family, whatever it might be. And then older folks sit around and they talk about the glory days of the past. Y'all remember Bruce Springsteen's song, Glory Days? If you don't, it's a horrible song. It's a great song. Horrible song. Talks about him going into a bar someplace with a guy that all he could talk about was how great he was playing baseball in high school. His glory days. Unfortunately, for most people who fall into the last category, that is, they live in the past and they relive their glory days, the past is filled with regrets, too. The what ifs. Sidebar, never play the what if game. Past is over and done. You can't do anything about it. Never play the, but what if I had gotten there 5 minutes earlier? What if I had gotten there 5 minutes later? What if I had bet on this horse rather than the other one? What if I bought a lottery ticket? Yeah, no, the what if game doesn't work. But the past is filled with regrets. Maybe purposefully unremembered events. And maybe you think about whatever you consider to be your glory days. Maybe I'm still a kid because glory days are right now. There are no good old days. That was a song too. The good old days are right now. But it has been observed also that those who do not know history are doomed to repeat it. That's why I was so horrified when they started tearing down Confederate statues and things. Rather than tearing them down, trying to make them go away, they should have left them just and added information about the negative side of those people. Because if they just disappear, what happens? Eventually it's going to come back again. And so people tend to repeat history even when it really isn't repeatable. Because you can't go back. Nothing's ever the same. You can't go over again. And maybe some things aren't or shouldn't be repeatable or even desirable to redo. And that's the whole stupidity of the cancel culture that we're stuck in right now. But it's nothing new either. Not really. Jeremiah was a victim of this kind of thinking. Imagine the prophet of God who was a victim. Again, how many people run around society today? Well, I'm this way because somebody did it to me. I can't do this because somebody's doing it to me. They lived in the whole victimhood idea. Even the prophets were victims because the people didn't like what they said when they spoke God's truth. Why Jesus said, "Oh, Jerusalem, well, you killed my prophets." Because they did. But Jeremiah was stuck in that culture, and sort of like ours today, they had forgotten history, or a big chunk of it. Jeremiah was living in a time when the people of God had turned their backs on God again. But this time it wasn't necessarily because they had forgotten history. They were just repeating it. As Hamlet said, they were suffering the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. They were catching all kinds of stuff with things that they had done. Knowingly or not, their misfortunes were of their own making. They abandoned God for worthless idols. In Jeremiah's time, in the first century today, not much different. The people of God forgot their history. I know I'm repeating, but I'm trying to emphasize something here. The history of all the misfortune that they had experienced, all the way back to Abraham. But more recently for them, beginning with Moses and Joshua, both of whom gave them a choice as to who they would serve. Very famous passage from Joshua. They have it hanging in the house. It says, "Serve who you choose to serve, the gods across the river, the ones you served in Egypt. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Joshua gave them that choice. And they chose. They chose God, but didn't keep that choice. In the time of the judges, ups and downs, the divided kingdom of Israel. And then the empire of Assyria came and conquered the northern part of the kingdom. You've heard the expression, the 10 lost tribes of Israel? That's where it comes from. In 721 B.C., the Assyrians invaded northern part of country, called Israel, or Ephraim, and carried away all the leaders. That was the first 12 tribes, or 10 tribes that were lost. They had forgotten their captivity, the exile in Babylon. And by the time Jesus rolled around, they were living under the Romans, and yet they still forgot God. Superficially, they held to their beliefs. They wouldn't bow down to Caesar. They refused to worship this man as a god. You know, the Romans had a very good policy when they conquered a country. They let the people carry on more or less as they were. They let them have their own religion. But they said, you also have to worship Caesar. Most, if not all, of the religions of that day were what we call syncretic. Syncretic. Whereas they could absorb other deities, other beliefs into their particular understanding of religion. It was fine. Jews couldn't do that. Even today, you know, there are Hindus who worship Jesus as the Son of God, along with Vishnu and Brahma and all the rest of the 100 million Hindu gods, because they just brought him into their system of thought. But the Jews couldn't do that. I mean, that caused problems for them. Superficially, they held their beliefs, but the leaders became what we call Hellenized. They started living like the Romans did, even though Hellenized means Greek. So the leaders got separated out, mainly the kings. The priests kind of went back and forth, but the people sort of remained Jews. The Church of God, they wouldn't have called themselves such, but they were. The chosen people under Rome caused Rome all kinds of problems. There were many rebellions. Judea was the worst posting that a Roman legionnaire could get because it was constantly in upheaval. Even Pontius Pilate, you know that name, Pontius Pilate? The guy who washed his hands and wound up allowing Jesus to be crucified. Even Pontius Pilate, with all of his power and authority and ability, hated where he was. These Jews who clung to God, though, and fought the Romans, both militarily and culturally, was admirable. Because Isaiah talked about this in chapter 10. He said, the remnant that's left in Israel, the survivors of the house of Jacob, will faithfully trust the Lord, the Holy One of Israel. The survivors doesn't mean that everybody went along with that. Now, Jesus addresses this situation more or less directly in the parable he teaches. A man who is morally reprehensible. Did that piece of scripture bother you today? Bothers me every time I read it. When you've got a guy who's cheating his boss. Hey, Bob, you owe this guy 20 bucks? Make it 10, and he won't be any wiser. He's cheating the boss. Maybe he was skimming off the top. Every time you pay me 20, I take 2 and just give the boss 18. Whatever it was. The guy was dishonest. What would you do as his boss? Fire him. But instead, he gets praised for his shrewdness. Maybe the guy who was the boss said, at least this way I got partial payment. Or because the guy was trying to set himself up for good fortune from the people he let off easy, the boss said, this guy's not so stupid after all, even though he's stealing my money. Bothers me that he's getting praised from something that's underhanded and wrong. But that's not what Jesus is talking about. He's not praising the man's unscrupulousness. He's reminding them that those who deal in what used to be called filthy lucre. Remember that expression? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. It's an old one that got passed around. Filthy lucre. Money. They will receive their just rewards even though they may appear to be prosperous and doing well. Jesus, in another place in Matthew, kind of continues his theme. He says, don't store up treasures here on earth where moths eat them and rust destroys them and where thieves break in and steal. Store your treasures in heaven where moths and rust cannot destroy and thieves do not break in and steal. Wherever your treasure is, there the desire of your heart will be also. This furthers this concept that Jesus is bringing out about this dishonest guy. He's saying the most important thing here today, Jesus speaking, the most important thing here today is to remember you can only serve one master. You can't serve God and wealth. You can have wealth, but you cannot serve it. You cannot worship it. Because wealth, for many people at least, becomes an idol. I've talked about idols before, how the biggest idol in Christianity is this. When the Bible becomes an idol and you begin to worship it, not literally bowing down to it, but it takes a higher place than God. It's money, it's power, and influence, it's popularity and making connections. It's sex and drugs and rock and roll. I know everybody's heard that one. Probably lived through it. Whatever takes your gaze off of God the Creator and focuses somewhere else, something that is a creation, makes idols and is wrong and it affects us deeply. As we left church last night, I said to Andrea, the guy was preaching, he must have read part of my sermon that I had written already. He obviously didn't, but he was talking about the same thing. And he, like I mentioned, right, about say, he mentioned, crosses and crucifixes can become an idol or a person, such as Mary, the mother of Jesus. She is probably the most pervasive idol in the churches today. The Virgin Mary. You know, there's a whole order of Catholic priests and monks and nuns called the Marians. And all their time is spent on Mary. Sidebar. Catholics spend way, way too much time on Mary. We don't spend enough. And Joseph gets the short end of the stick from both of us. But Mary is not to be venerated or worshipped. She was just a very
special girl.
Back to the point. The building of a church can become an idol. We served a church in Minnesota that was so hung up on the building that the day after we left, or sorry, the month after we left, after a church service, as the people left, they left their keys to the building on a table in the back and they just let the building close. The building was too important for them to merge together with another church to keep the congregation going, which is what we had wanted to do for 8 years. They wouldn't do it. In any case, we need to be aware of the idols we have in this world, in our lives, and get rid of them. Actually, a guy talking last night listed three different ways to do that. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to tell you, it's not easy to get rid of something that you idolize. First, you have to identify something as an idol, something that you put your eyes on too hard, and then get rid of them. Some things are easier to get rid of than others. Doesn't matter how hard it is, you need to get rid of whatever stands up to you as an idol, because idols stand between you and God. And there's only one thing that comes between you and God, and that's Jesus. And he's not coming between you, he's mediator. Our priorities have always been to God first in our life. If we fail at that, and we all have, at some point in time, but we get back on track. Sometimes there's a short span of time when physical, worldly needs have to be met. And maybe God gets set aside for a while, but you come back. But God doesn't really get set aside. God just is not the focus for a while. Still wrong, but it happens and it's handleable. But every instance is different for every person. Every idol is different for every person. We just have to deal with it. Part of the problem is that when you identify an idol in your life and get rid of it, say it is money, what Jesus is talking about, wealth, and you realize that you are worshiping that money, it doesn't mean you have to get rid of it all and become broke. Just means you have to change your focus on what it is. Share it. Give it away. Not to impoverish yourself necessarily, but to get it out of your life as an idol. Because there's absolutely nothing wrong with being wealthy as long as you use that wealth properly and you don't worship it. But you have to get rid of these things. And as soon as you get rid of wealth as your idol, guess what? You have power is going to pop up instead. We have this continual influx of temptations, satanic, demonic, however you want to look at it, evil, that keeps putting things in our way. And we have to be aware of that. But there is no reason to despair. You can get rid of idols, you can work around them, you can live through them. Jeremiah was desperate. He was crying for his people. The psalmist the same way. He was just hurting. They were both in despair, but neither of them ever gave up. The psalmist in this case was David. You know, he became the king and all the wonderful things that he did. And Jeremiah kept going. Lived out his life in Egypt in exile, but there's never, ever a reason to despair as long as God is first in our heart. And God is the only one thing, person that we worship. And here's the reason why there's no reason to despair. Paul writes in Romans, I am convinced that nothing can ever separate us from God's love, neither death nor life, angels or demons, neither fears for today nor worries about tomorrow. Children and adults, today and tomorrow. Not even the powers of hell can separate us from God's love. Knowing that, there is no reason to despair, ever. You can get rid of the idols of despair. No matter how desperate a situation may be, there's always hope. Never despair. There's always hope in Jesus, because he was, he is, and he always will be. And there will be no despair. Just hope. Amen.